I bought a pair of red Scarlet football pants after that.
You bought.
I wish fans would come in, like, they all come in jerseys, but
why not come in pants?
I could maybe see it being an optical illusion, just because I don't think any color would possibly stick out more than, like, maybe hot pink than their orange.
Well, that is true. You know, speaking of
optics,
if you're into color palette theory, the visual field created by the red and orange under the lights was
cool.
Absolutely impressive. Very impressionistic.
Did you like Ohio State's uniforms?
I did.
Yeah, I thought they were cool.
That doesn't, like, students aren't in the tailgate lots around the stadium. Like, those are all fans. So, like, that has nothing to do with it.
So I pull into the lot, and usually there's a few opposing groups. It was dominated by Tennessee, and the first thing we pulled up into was a group photo of about 40 fans.
Yeah.
Like, pull into the spot, the lights illuminate this group, and they're like, leave them on. So we, like, helped their Tennessee team photo. It was, I have just never seen that many people. And I was like, somebody in the bathroom told us that some official connected to, this is hearsay, some official connected to Ohio State leaked the code to the Tennessee fans. Did you hear, like, they were
almost
supposed
to
be at
3,500,
but
they
got closer to 30,000.
Yeah, I mean, I heard there was a leaked presale code when the tickets went on sale. I think they were $100, but I think people thought, like, the leaked presale code was taken advantage by scalpers and ticket reseller sites, and then they unloaded all of them to the Tennessee fans, and then... But yeah, what would you say? 30,000 Tennessee fans? 25,000?
I went high. I said 30 at first, and I thought maybe 40.
Yeah,
you're probably
right.
It's probably 25 to 30 creeping up above.
Because you were sitting on the press box side of the stadium.
I was.
I feel like that side was 90% Ohio State. The other side of the stadium was 60% Ohio State. And then the student section in the south stands was 95% Ohio State.
That's true. But I will also say, like, in my little area that is almost entirely scarlet and gray, except for usually the occasional significant other, there was a lot of Tennessee. I sat right next to a Tennessee fan who was the spitting image of Alex Smith.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. He was a super cool guy. Yeah. He was into football. He you know, we chatted throughout the game, and he was like, as far as I'm concerned, Tennessee is playing with house money. We've been bad forever. You know, it's really been the 97 Peyton Manning years, the last time we were super relevant.
98 when they won the national title.
He's really high on their quarterback, Nico, who we were talking about is not built like our own Toledo Blade columnist, David Briggs. Nico is about 6'7", so you would be looking down on
him. That's true.
I am your host, Phil Kaplan, and football watcher aficionado, and this is the 17th episode of the Heart of the Rivalry, where we examine the cherished college football rivalries of Ohio State, Michigan, Bowling Green, and UT. And our only team that played brought home a victory, a no-doubter, as we talked about. There was never a doubt in our minds. What did you think?
Well, first of all, you said Tennessee fans were kind of felt like they were playing with house money. That's kind of the same vibe with Ohio State fans, right? Everybody just kind of loose, enjoying a nice winter football game. Win, you're happy. Lose, hey, it's a great season.
I wanted them to come out loose. I thought even if you go down, play loose.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play like you're making diamonds up there.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you could not have had a more... I would argue this was probably the most pressure-packed game in the 102-year history of Ohio Stadium.
Oh, don't oversell
it. I would say there have been more consequential games, but when you talk about the temperature on Ryan Day and everything that was at stake for the momentum and just direction of the program, I would say this was probably the most pressure-packed game, and Ohio State absolutely responded. You know, the coaches came up with an incredibly creative game plan. It's like, where...
That utilized our best assets.
Yeah.
Our best
Imagine
assets.
That, getting the ball... Getting the ball to your playmakers in space is a good idea rather than they could have met Tennessee on its terms. Tennessee has a great defensive line. Ohio State's deficiency right now is their undermanned offensive line. They could have done the same game plan and tried to prove how tough they were. But guess what? They started passing. That opened up the run. And then the offensive line kind of steadily built confidence and they played awesome too. So all around, just an absolute ass kicking. And yeah, this is probably Ohio State's best game
This year
for sure. But I mean, best games, I mean, maybe since like the 2020 playoff win over Clemson. I mean, this is just a
people will say around, we really played well against Georgia.
Right, but you can't count a loss.
I mean,
defensive collapse. I mean, this was electrifying defense, show-stopping offense. I mean, everything came together. And now you build that confidence. Now you've got a revenge game against Oregon in the Rose Bowl. And if Ohio State plays anywhere close to that, I don't really see anybody beating them.
They have to
do that again, which is easier said than done. But this kind of changes everything with the narrative for sure.
How about Jack Sawyer again almost getting that? He's going to get that feather edge flat pick six. He's going to get one. I was happy for him, though. I do feel like a guy named Jack Sawyer wearing a mid-30s number playing linebacker, like that person has been at Ohio State forever.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah,
so I was happy for him. But no, we can't be any happier for Ryan Day, to be honest.
Sure.
I mean, Ohio State fans love to see their team win.
Right.
I feel like that guy just needed a game like this as much as anybody.
Right. It was great to see him just smiling and loose after the game.
Yeah.
And you could see this was maybe this carries on to him and they coach the run of their lives as well. And fairy tale ending. What's kind of your take, not to delve back into the negative, but as Kurt Herbstreit said, there will be a big portion of Ohio State fans, if they now go out and lose to Oregon, that'll still want them fired. Is that, I say that's still completely fair. What's your take on if they lose to Oregon? 11-3.
So when
you would now have gone 0-4 against Michigan. You would have gone 0-4 in the national titles. You would have gone 0-4 in even getting to the Big Ten title game the last 4 years.
Is this enough?
This
is the analysis I wanted to get to, is to go straight back into the Ohio State Michigan game. He's done this enough times that I don't think a 1-point loss is going to, it's not going to keep the water from coming into the ship if he loses it. Now, if he beats Oregon and gets to the ship and loses there in a respectful way, I couldn't imagine letting a guy like that go.
Right.
I already feel like, you know, Michigan is obviously his kryptonite, but other than that, he's running a great program.
Right.
So let's not, as Kirk Herbstreit says, let's not be part of the lunatic fringe. Right,
he hates Ohio State fans. There's just no question about that.
Do you think
this
he's just mad that Jeremiah Smith is making people forget about him being number four? That's not part of it.
What do you think about? I mean,
you were always a Kenyon Rambo guy, though. There was one guy who in the parking lot definitely had too many pops.
Okay.
But he wasn't fighting.
A Tennessee fan?
He was just putting too much weight on one hip and then too much weight on another. he was Tennessee.
And you toppled him over.
The Heart of the Rivalry is sponsored by The Blade Vault. TheBladeVault.com is the Blade's online store for Blade memorabilia like custom reprints, plaques, books, and archive requests of photos and front pages. Using The Blade's exhaustive private library, The Blade Vault can make any history a great present.
Let's go. Last minute gift ideas.
From 1835 to today, own your story, own your piece of history. Visit thebladevault.com. Use the code BV20 for your first order. This is not an illegally leaked code. You're allowed to have this one. BV20. That's Blade Vault BV20.
But that's only for Ohio State, Toledo, Michigan, and Bowling Green fans. That's not for rival fans.
You can declare your fanship at checkout.
No. Well, I also say on Ryan Day, even if they win the national title, I could absolutely see him walking away, just kind of going out on top.
I hadn't considered that.
No one would suggest he's quote unquote quitting. I do think there's a big part of him and his family that have asked, is this worth it? I mean, he's a guy from a smaller school in New England. He kind of came up and I don't know. I just don't know if being the head coach at Ohio State was what he signed up for. I think he absolutely appreciates this incredible job and everything that comes with it. He knows it's at the very peak of your profession, but is it worth it to be in this absolute vicious fishbowl when you lose? Just everything around it. I mean, this the pressure, the 365 day nature of being coach at Ohio State, and just all the everything focused on one or two games.
Well, it hasn't turned his hair gray, so he must be doing okay.
That's true. What kind of what's the Pantone of the jet black dye that
I would say that would be, you would, the label might say like an onyx black.
Okay.
Because there's a gloss to it. You know, it's not just like like shepherd's black, which is just sort of pitch.
But anyway, Kurt Herbstreit.
That's our second color theory part of the show. So if you had the trifecta in play for color theory,
we had a minor in color theory at Northwestern, right?
No, my friend. I have a bachelor in fine arts from the Ohio State University, and one of the things that I was strongest at was color theory.
Okay, nice. So
that's the third reference. Your bet has cashed.
No, I mean, Herbstreit obviously has a complicated relationship with Ohio State fans, as we've mentioned. You know, I mean, he was kind of used to live in Columbus, used to be a Ohio State quarterback, had a popular drive time radio show in Columbus for many years.
Used to like Ohio State.
His son is still on the team. He likes the Ohio State program.
His other son just went to Michigan.
I know, but that's because they offered him a scholarship. You can argue whether Michigan is doing that to troll Ohio State, but that would be a conversation.
Well, he still took it.
For another day. Oh, absolutely. And the son grew up just absolutely huge Ohio State fan. I mean, just living and dying with the losses. So that's crazy as well. So cool story for the rivalry in future years. But Herbstreit, he moved to Nashville and moved away from Columbus 15, 20 years ago, citing just the craziness of Ohio State fans. And obviously, I would say Kirby probably has a little bit of thin skin given the job he has. But over the years, the kind of the relationship is Ohio State fans have turned on him even more just for things here and there, he says. I think Kirby's obviously a great analyst. I don't quite get the how much Ohio State fans don't like him.
I don't either, but I also am a little bit, I almost lean a little boomer this way. People also don't like Al Michaels when Al Michaels and Kirby call together.
Yeah.
I love those two. Al Michaels, I do too.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Herbie just kind of takes the criticism and just kind of can't let it roll off his back. And he just has to poke and poke and poke back at Ohio State fans. And it just kind of, the relationship just kind of grows more and more estranged. And I mean, if you listen to the broadcast, I was covering the game in the press box, but you hear snippets and you hear what he said, and he was going after Ohio State fans again.
And he went after his own company to do so.
There's people on ESPN saying he should be fired. I used to say the lunatic fringe of Ohio State fans was maybe 5 to 8%. Now it's 20.
Yeah.
And it's just like, maybe that's true. But he's also going at anyone who questions Ryan Day's fitness to be the head coach.
I was just going to say, he's defending his Buckeyes through, also.
That's completely nuts to me. I think reasonable people can have an argument on Ryan Day. Obviously, look at his record, 67-10. Good guy, great recruiter. So many things going for him. But to completely dismiss the other side that says, hey, you're getting paid $10 million a year. You followed Urban Meyer. You were handed a Cadillac. Is it too much to ask to occasionally beat Michigan, to occasionally make the Big Ten title game, to occasionally win the national title? Now, occasionally winning the national title is doing a great job, but they say the three goals each year, beat Michigan, win the Big Ten, win the national title.
And how many of those do we have in the past four years?
If they don't win it this year, that would be 0-12. That's even below the Mendoza line. I can do the math.
It's not the O you want, no HIO.
So I don't understand this suggestion. No one is saying Ryan Day is not a good guy. The people who are coming at him personally, or the one or two people who are going at his family, that is the lunatic fringe in my book. That is completely insane. And if you're doing that, you should be in jail.
That's not a football opinion.
That's ridiculous. Equating the lunatic fringe to people who are saying that Ryan Day should be fired if they lose to Oregon. I don't see that at all. Again, reasonable people can have divergent views on this opinion, but that's not an extreme opinion that Ryan Day should be fired if they lose to Oregon. And I would say, like, Kurt Herbstreit is probably getting many millions a year to do this. There's millions of people watching these games. Ryan Day is getting paid $10 million a year. That tells us none of us have any of this in perspective, or all this money wouldn't be there. So let's not pretend that, oh, wow, that's so crazy. It's like, let's just all appreciate this nice little game that these collegiate athletes are playing. It's like, Herbie, you're making probably $10 million a year. Like, this is big business. And if you're not getting it done, like, there are consequences.
spitting hot.
And this is I can't believe we're down this path, because this should be a positive show for Ohio State. Let's get this back on the positive track, Phil. I'm sorry.
Okay, I have some positive news. Ohio State's
and I do think they're going to beat Oregon.
Air Nolan has decommitted from Ohio State.
He has landed. He is in
What did you think about that?
He's in the portal. Well, Devin Brown's in the portal too, and he's playing. The backup quarterback for Ohio State is in the transfer portal and playing, and he played on Saturday. That's kind of crazy. I mean, how many guys actually in the portal are playing?
I had the headline written in my mind. What did you think was the most salient moment from this game?
The most salient moment? I mean, I'd say it's the first.
You got to encapsulate it in one sentiment.
One sentiment? I mean, hair on fire, out of the gate dominance. That's my one word. That's all dashes.
That's dashes in between. Wrong. Wrong. That's not the best headline. The best headline was Day's Night. Buckeyes topple Rocky, Tennessee.
That's good. Yeah.
Fire.
That's great.
It's so good.
And if they had lost, it would have been a new day for Ohio State. But it's not to be worried about.
I have never been the person that's like, oh, when you put the U upside down, you get all mad. When Tennessee fans were singing over top of our Carmen, Ohio, yeah. I was getting riled.
You were throwing
hands. I was getting riled.
Yeah.
There was
a
bug up there, Dave. Got a bug up there.
Yeah. My favorite tweet from after the game was obviously people, Tennessee fans, bragging about taking over Ohio Stadium. And then third quarter, Tennessee took over the exits. So, har, har, har.
Couldn't have been a better start. And the defense came out, given their quarterback, Nico, whose last name I'm actually not going to attempt to say. But he's like 6'7 and not even 200 pounds. And we came out popping. He got his helmet cracked on the first series.
Right.
That's pretty crazy.
I know. That's, yeah. Yeah, they showed a picture. Helmet broken on the first series. So, you know, the pads are popping when that happens.
But, you know, he was elusive. He was probably their best offense. His feet were probably their best offense.
Absolutely. I mean, when he made Caleb Down miss on just kind of made him look silly on one play, that's when you know you're balling. But, yeah, he kind of Tennessee star running back Dylan Sampson got hurt in the first quarter. So I think there was one stretch of like 30 of 38 plays that Nico either threw or ran or passed. So he was damn near putting the entire team on his back. And for a minute, it was going pretty well. I mean, 21-10 at halftime. When it was 21-10, it's like, darn, is that interception in the red zone when Ohio State's up 21-0, about to go up 28-0. Is that a play we're going to look back on that completely changed momentum? But
you know,
coming out of the third quarter, Ohio State's defense forces an immediate three and out, and Ohio State just keeps the pedal to the metal. And most impressive for me was the offensive line, honestly. I mean, they kept Will Howard upright to throw for 300-plus yards. Will Howard was awesome. Played his game of the season.
We had a good running game.
The pass, and that opens up the run a little bit. And they, 150-plus rushing yards against a great Tennessee defense. And how about Luke Montgomery, local boy, doing Northwest Ohio proud.
Truck's good. Truck's good.
Absolutely.
You told me he not only did he look good, but even for the experts, he graded out the highest among our linemen.
He came in on the third Ryan Day earlier in the week, said he was going to rotate in at guard. The interior line had been the big worry against Michigan, so he was going to rotate in at guard. He comes in on the third series. First real action with the starters this year. Looks great from the start. Springs Trevian Henderson's 29-yard touchdown run with a great pancake block. And he played, I think, 31 snaps. According to Pro Football Focus, which is the scouting service that grades every player in every game, he was the highest graded Ohio State offensive lineman. I believe the highest graded offensive lineman in the game for either team, period. So I think Ohio State maybe unlocked something there on the offensive line with Luke Montgomery. I would put him as a starter at one of the guards. I'm not just saying that because he's a Northwest Ohio guy.
Attaboy, Luke.
But, I mean, the way they performed, the way they called the game plan to kind of mask the deficiencies a little bit, and just kind of everything came together. And the way, if the line can continue playing with that confidence and that I don't know. It just made all the difference in the world having that 3 weeks off to kind of recalibrate, take a deep breath, and also just boil for three weeks. Donovan Jackson, the left tackle, said everyone and their brother was telling us we sucked for the last 3 weeks. I believe he even said, he said, every analyst, everyone with a podcast. So I kind of took that as a personal shot because we have a podcast, Phil. And
but we didn't think that he sucks. We just thought that Ohio State was exhibiting the behavior of a team that you might say sucks.
Yeah, we thought the line sucked. but that was also because they're undermanned a little bit. But anyway,
way to go out and prove people wrong. Bravo. That's what you want to put the chip on your shoulder for.
Right, it took it personal, and bravo, they controlled the line of scrimmage. And I think, I mean, if you graded all 8 units on both sides of the ball, I mean, Ohio State won every unit.
I want you to, before we cut out to our next segment and get back into some action, I want you to tell me from the press box experience and from the talk afterwards at the pressers and the quotes, what felt different?
What felt different? I mean, just the weight off their back from the Michigan game and just coming out angry.
Sense that from the very beginning? In the press box.
In the press box, like after the game started?
Yeah.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's just the way they went down on that first drive. I mean, the way Will Howard was just slinging dimes from the very start.
He did drop one. He did drop some.
And then on the second, then the second drive with the 40-yard pass to Abuka, then it's like, okay, they came to play. And you wondered if it was going to – I mean, they could have channeled the momentum or channeled all the anger and frustration and pain in the air and been broken. I mean, they obviously channeled it in a completely positive way. They came out loose and confident and mad. And just absolutely dominated from the start, and you could feel it anywhere in the stadium. I mean, this was the team Ohio State fans had waited for all season. This was the best team in the country.
Afterward, against the team up north, we saw Ryan Day, who seemed to be standing outside of his body. What was his demeanor like in the press conference?
Very, I mean, certainly a lot looser, but also very, very businesslike. I mean, it's only one game.
Good.
It would have been they had a idiotic presentation and a nod to the old bowl system where, like, do a smiling presentation with the Rose Bowl officials.
It's somebody like, hey, in a blazer came up.
Yeah, we present you with an invitation to the Rose Bowl, and like Ohio State ceremonially accepts. They should have declined the bid and just been like, you know what? We're going out with a home victory. We're gonna go out on top. But no, I mean, I thought it would have been a bad look if he had been like, if he had kind of wanted to throw it in the critic's face and tack Lou Holtz. Like,
where's Lou Holtz?
Where's Lou Holtz?
Where, I wish he was here right now.
Yeah. Well, that's a tough football team you see. And if you don't know that, then you don't know football.
Dave, but he proved like, it to that old man. He proved it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Let your actions talk. And they did. But he also appreciates, I mean, they kept going back. This is just one win in a four game journey. And I think it's still a championship or bust mode. That's how they're treating it. And, you know, sometimes pressure works against you, but in this time it brought out their very best.
Chips ahoy. We have been talking about looking forward to the MAC bowl games. By the time we reconvene, it will be after the year and those games will have been played. Do you have any last minute thoughts on Toledo or Bowling Green's efforts coming forward?
Can I just make one more point about the Michigan game? No, I'm kidding. no, I think Toledo and Bowling Green both playing 7-5 teams in the bowl game, both a chance to, you know, end the season on a feel-good note. Bowling Green, all their guys are playing, so credit to Scott Loeffler and the culture he's built there. They want to go out on a high note. Toledo have a chance to beat a second Power Four team in 1 year. That would give Toledo more Power Four wins than some Power Four teams would have Power Four wins. Look at Kentucky. Well, Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss coach, is talking all day, just trashing Indiana and all the teams.
Hypotheticals.
Trashing
Lane Kiffin in the hypotheticals.
Trashing all the teams in the playoff, basically suggesting like Alabama and Ole Miss would give these teams better games. And SEC undefeated in all hypothetical matchups. And it's just like it's mind-boggling. First of all, Lane Kiffin, and I'm getting in a roundabout way, getting back to Lane Kiffin's Ole Miss team gave Kentucky their only Power Four win. only win in the SEC. So apparently that's the three loss team that should have been in there. And I think when you watch Ohio State just blow the doors off Tennessee, guess what? They would have done the same thing to Alabama. They would have done the same thing to Ole Miss. And I don't think they would have, Alabama or Ole Miss would have acquitted themselves any better against Notre Dame, or maybe they would have done better than SMU. That was a complete debacle at Penn State. I expect Alabama to roll. Michigan, most of their top guys are opting out. Alabama, all of their top guys are playing. It kind of carried over the Saban culture, at least in this first year under Kalen DeBoer. Pretty incredible that all their guys are playing with really nothing to play for, with what we would traditionally think of a big stakes game. So, but of course, Herbie, going back to Herbie, he was the one person on game day that picked Michigan. I wonder why, given that his son is going there. But
hey, I'm taking Michigan. Yeah,
maybe he'll prove us wrong. So you taking Michigan?
I'm taking
all
Michigan.
Right, all right.
Yeah. I'm taking all our team. Why wouldn't I take?
Wouldn't
all
be
our
surprised.
Teams?
Yeah,
I'm telling you here right now, the Rockets are going to win. Although they're the team I'm actually most worried about. I have more confidence in Michigan beating Alabama than I do in the Rockets. But
you know
I'm
what?
Telling it's you, the Rockets are going to win. Yeah. The Falcons are going to win. The Wolverines are going to win. And Ohio State is going to beat the brakes off
that.
Of the Oregon Ducks.
That's actually interesting. My confidence meter in all four of our teams winning, Michigan would actually probably be my lowest confidence.
That's
only because their guys are – so my
– That's actually my logical.
Most,
Mine
my
is
most,
not a logical
My most – I am actually – And again, this is also a paradox. Like, Ohio State's playing the best team in the country. I'm kind of most confident Ohio State will beat Oregon.
That's what I'm
especially
talking about.
Especially in just a rematch game. They lost at Oregon. Ohio State with everything to prove, and they're finally got maybe their swagger back a little bit. They're hitting the peak.
And what's Oregon been doing? Ice cream.
That's right.
Couches.
That's right.
Peer into the numerical ether for me. Give me an Ohio State-Oregon score.
I would say... 38-28.
So double digits.
Yeah.
That's double digits.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that I had Tennessee's score correct when I predicted them to have 17.
Yep.
Ohio State doubled me up I said that they would only have 23 and they ended up scoring 22.
Good call. So what's your score pick?
I think now I could be totally drinking the
Might
all
be too
Scarlet,
conservative.
I could be drinking the all Scarlet Kool-Aid. Because that's the team that I think has the most talent in the country, and they play that way. They can beat Oregon soundly, and their defense is so much better. I think I said this team is better by a lot than when they lost by a little. 35-12.
Oh, my goodness.
35-12. Thanks for watching The Heart of the Rivalry. He's Dave Briggs. I'm Phil Kaplan.
No. U.M. They should have a UM.
Why don't they do that?
I don't know. That'd be pretty cool.
UM.